Show presents Scratch a Track,
the podcast where we debate which track to scratch off some of the most known and unknown albums of all time.
We live in an era of singles.
This is an album.
People no longer listen to an album for the work it truly is.
It kind of defines a band.
It's just not something that people relate to nowadays.
We've all gotten the dreaded.
Started out as a game.
Which track on the album would you scratch out if you had to? Hey everyone, welcome to another exciting episode of the Scratch a Track podcast presented by the Dude and Grim Show. I'm the Dude.
And I am Grim. And today we are here to discuss Hold It Up, Dude, Figure 8 by Elliott Smith.
Don't hate on Figure 8.
No.
You most certainly are. Before we get into it, we just want to remind everyone that this is the podcast where we pick some of your favorite albums. Just like Elliott Smith's Figure 8, we talk about the album and we kind of go through each track on the album. And ultimately, at the end, we decide what track we should scratch off. Now, that doesn't mean we don't like the track, but back in the day, Grim, as you're about to say, what used to happen to your favorite discs and CDs and vinyl records?
Yeah, this podcast is a music review podcast, but it's not just about feelings, right? Because a lot of music reviews are just feelings, like how the person feels about it. And the thing is, feelings are not objective reality. So what we try to do is look at it from a perspective of, what did the album mean when it came out? How was it recorded? Interesting things like that. And then we try to throw in that dash of reality, which is if you had this album, be it on vinyl or CD, at some point you probably got to a place where one of the tracks got a scratch in it and would skip. Right? And so the game that the Duder and I always played was, okay, so we talk about our favorite albums, what we liked, maybe what we didn't like, and ultimately what we didn't like becomes not even so much what we didn't like, what could we live without? If you could choose the track that skipped, that got scratched, what one would you choose? And that's the crux of it.
Exactly. And so, Grim, right after everyone goes ahead and
like, subscribe, and comment below.
Please let us know, comment below, what track you would scratch on the album. Now, you can do it now, or you can wait till the end of the episode after we go through each track. But please let us know, because it sparks up some really interesting debates and conversations.
Yeah, and that's the whole bit about it. I mean, neither one of us think that we're right. It becomes a matter of opinion.
Oh, I do. No, I'm right.
I don't know, man. We've seen some of those albums in the past, and I think you don't get a what the fuck is that? Unless,
unless you don't do shit. Unless what? Unless you do it first.
Yeah. So, right. With that said,
without further ado,
Figure 8 by Elliott Smith. So,
his fifth album, man. Fifth. Is this, let me ask you right off the back, is this your favorite Elliott Smith album?
No, it is not.
Okay.
And I hate to say this because I think a lot of true Elliott Smith fans would give me a
what the fuck is that shit
for saying this. But dude, my personal favorite is actually From a Basement on the Hill.
Okay.
And I think it's like it's because to me, From a Basement on the Hill was like where he would have gone. And I know that some people may feel like it's a sacrilege because he didn't go there. But if you listen to Figure 8 and then listen to that album, it's like the folks who helped out with those recordings on From a Basement on the Hill, I feel like they had a pretty good idea of where this was going. And I think they took it to that step. So that's...
Well, it is cool because if you look at obviously his first album and then as he's progressed, this is his fifth album. There is a progression in his sound, a progression in the production. I mean, you can tell right away from his first album, which is primarily acoustic stuff, but phenomenal. I mean, it's just it's one of my favorite. It might be my second favorite album of his. I like it so much.
Like the self-titled Elliott Smith?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I love it, man.
What about New Moon? Do you ever listen? New Moon's great.
So yeah, New Moon is great. But it's what is it? Because we talked about this on the Phoebe Bridgers album or that we just talked about. Because she was heavily inspired by New Moon in her Punisher album, and I believe that's New Moon is more it's more of a compilation album of some other rarities and some B-sides. Like it even has an alternate version of Miss Misery, which is a song that he played at the Academy Awards and the Good Will Hunting soundtrack. Mm-hmm. So it's yeah, I'd be interested to see what fans think of that album as well, because it's kind of in a certain way it's kind of similar to From Basement on a Hill, where it's you know, after his death is kind of when it came out.
So. Yeah, the only difference that I would cite is I feel like in New Moon, I think that the recordings were kept more true to form with how he did them, whereas sure. From a Basement on the Hill was, you know, there was some embellishments made, albeit I think really good ones. But there's also another version too on New Moon of Pretty Mary Kay, which may be worth noting. But either way,
cool.
Either or.
Well, dude, this album's pretty interesting. It was recorded in a bunch of places, some famous places. Some was at Sunset Sound, some were at Abbey Road in London, like
Capitol cool. Studios.
Like, yeah, I mean he went some places in this album.
Sonora Studios.
Yeah.
And I really, I think that's cool because I think they did a good job of, I don't hear, I guess, in my mind, like I couldn't like pin a track and say, oh, well, this is obviously from a different
completely
section. It all sounds yeah. very cohesive to me.
Absolutely. No, it does. It definitely does. Well, it's interesting because even the title, like Figure Eight, Elliott Smith said he liked the idea kind of this self-contained endless pursuit of perfection. And, you know, the object is not to stop or arrive anywhere. It's just, you know, to make things as beautiful as it can. And that's, you know, the figure eight, you just keep going.
Yeah, no, I it's infinity. Right. But another mm-hmm. thing that goes along with that is I believe that he also said in that he thought that the pursuit of perfection was, and I'm paraphrasing, I'm not directly quoting, but was not art, so to speak.
Sure. Yeah. Because I think you could also say that sometimes having, I don't know if I necessarily want to call them mistakes, but
imperfections.
Imperfections give it authenticity.
Yes.
And that
yes,
gives it sort of, you know, that sort of, I guess, soul and emotion. And that's really, if you've listened to Elliott Smith and you're a fan of him, that's the crux, I feel like, of his music is man, there's a lot going on there.
Oh, he's a great songwriter, a great lyricist, an excellent guitar. I mean, you could say,
I was going to ask you about that. What, how do you feel about him as a, you know, a guitarist?
I think he's a really good guitarist because, some of the stuff that he does were like his finger picking. I mean, mm-hmm. in my best days, I probably could have done that like effortlessly.
Yeah.
But now I don't have those chops anymore. And when I listen to him, regardless of that, it's just very well done. And that's the thing. I mean, In the other guitar parts that he puts in, they're the right parts, the right notes.
Sure.
And he does a good job because in this album, I mean, holy cow, he's credited with, you know, the guitars and then piano, drums on several tracks, Hammond organ, pump organ, which, dude, pump organ, those are some beastly instruments to play. Chamberlain, which is the cousin of the Mellotron, which we'll get into, harpsichord. Orchestra bells. I mean, he's a true musician where he doesn't say I'm a guitarist, this is what I play. Right. Like he does it all, and he does it very well.
Yeah, you know, one thing I don't think this is like a big deal or anything we need to take a deep dive in, but I feel like I call him a musician. And I feel like a lot of people who are solo artists, they are called singer-songwriters.
Yes.
And I feel like that kind of shortchanges them a little bit. I mean, that
true.
I don't know.
Maybe some of them are, and I can't speak to whomever we're talking about, but I think maybe some of them are, but he is not.
Yeah. I just feel like I think of musician. You just rattled off all the, you know, instruments and stuff that he plays, and I just feel like that kind of shortchanges him.
Well, he's sure. Just, and
an incredible musician.
Yeah. And one thing I was going to mention is, you know, I think a lot of people only associate Elliott Smith with the acoustic guitar and singing.
Sure.
And I love that part of what he does, but I feel he's like
great at it.
I feel like this album is almost like Elliott Smith meets the Beatles.
Yeah.
Like the backing vocals in this album are just spectacular. They're beautiful.
Killer. Great.
Like great. Really harmonies. Good.
Yeah. His
great vocals look. Good drummer. Are,
yeah, exactly. His vocals are amazing too. Very interesting voice. He has such a, he can project, but he has such a soft voice in kind
when
of the
he,
way,
yeah, when he wants
way
to, yeah.
he sings. Yeah, it's really nice and just pleasant to listen to. And you know, looking at him, you probably wouldn't be like, oh, that's what this guy sounds like. But it's very
he
very
looks pleasing he voice. Looks rough, like he should be in a punk band.
A little, yeah, he does definitely right.
And
right,
he was in a band prior to his solo career called Heat Miser. That was I'm not going to say punk, but I think a little more. Harder than what he is kind of
right probably yeah I just again and if people haven't seen the documentary Heaven Adores You is phenomenal documentary about him very well done, great interviews, a lot of I really liked how they did some of the things that where they had they used a lot of his there was an interview I think in a radio show or a couple of radio shows, and they used kind of his voiceover is sort of a narration to kind of show the progression of him telling the story almost in his own words, and he had interviews with other people and stuff. It was pretty cool. It's, you know, again, it's a sad story for most people who don't know his story. You know, we don't need to get into all that, but you know, unfortunately he left this world too soon. But he was just a, you know, tremendous musician, and it would have been interesting to see where he would have, you know, gone. I mean, even after From a Basement on a Hill, you know, onward, because again, you see a clear transition over the years from his albums. And in this one, I feel like, you know, I like EXO, but I just feel like this was just, to me, in his songwriting,
next level.
The production, there's so many layers going on in different instruments. I just feel like he really, you know, took it up to another level. So
yeah.
I'm just very really impressed with that progression. So now one thing, Grim, that we can talk about a little bit is you know, the cover of the album is kind of become famous, and there's been a lot of tributes done after he passed away, because this painting is off of a building in Los Angeles
on Sunset. And, correct?
On Sunset, yeah. And so the photographer, Autumn DeWilde, she had seen this painting on the building, and I think she said initially, like, she thought it was kind of weird, she didn't know about it, and then she wanted to do something with it, and then it just kind of worked out where they were trying to figure out what to do for the cover, because she was even asking Elliott Smith, like, you know, what do you want the cover to be?
And whatnot.
And he said to her, he was like, you know, everybody, when they think of me, they think I'm just like sitting in a dark place in a dark room, and there's dark furniture, and it's just like so dreary. And he's just like, that's not it. And so I think this is really kind of cool how they captured this here, and it also fits very well with Figure Eight, because even just looking at the cover itself, it looks like it's part of the figure eight.
Yeah. I know. That's what's really cool. And I like that when you read about that, it's like, it says that fans still go up to this wall and they'll write things and inscribe things. And then at some point, fans will also go up to the wall and like repaint it and like make it new again, which I think all that is really cool.
Yeah. Well, I also wanted to talk about just real quick. This book. So Autumn DeWilde, the photographer who took those photos that you see on the cover. I was able to get this book years ago. I mean, I've had it for a long time. And basically it has all of her, I don't say all, but tons and tons, hundreds of photos that she shot of Elliott Smith from different times in his career and his life. And there's a whole section dedicated just to kind of the photo shoot that they did for this album cover. So different outtake photos that they could use for the cover and whatnot. Yeah. So it is pretty cool. And then there's sort of I don't know if I call them interviews, but conversations like Beck Hansen. He did the foreword for it. And there's a conversation with him and some other people just kind of back and forth and other people that Elliott Smith knew throughout the years. So if you're an Elliott Smith fan, highly recommend picking this up. It also includes in the back this 5-song Live at Largo. That's the place where he had played live many times. But it has 5 songs, actually a CD. I don't even know if I knew it was in there, dude, but it's still like in the back.
That's awesome. Unboxing. This is an unboxing too.
Yeah. It has Angels, Between the Bars, Clementine, Clouds, and All My Rowdy Friends Have Settled Down are the tracks off of it. So I don't even have a CD player that I could probably play this in. So I'm just going to leave it there.
Send it to me. I got one.
Yeah. All right, Grim. I think we could probably get into this one.
Well, before we do, I want to talk about some of the reviews, the critical reception, as Wiki would put it. Some of the reviews that came out to date. Now, there's some of these reviews I really agree with, such as NME, which called it Smith's best effort to date, which I think it was. Spin wrote, the record is not a disappointment, it's a progression. I also think that's fair. AV Club wrote, Figure 8 is even better than previous records, a strong collection of lush, densely arranged power pop and inimitably intimate ballads. Wow, that's made up.
I'm familiar with.
I feel like when I'm playing Words with Friends on my phone and you play against like the bots, like that's one of those words that they would use and you're like, is that even a fucking word? Anyways,
just runs the game.
I guess where I wanted to go is Pitchfork, because usually I think Pitchfork has really good things to say, and I feel like that would, to me, I would view that as a go-to source for
In line with
Sure, for the most part. But in this case,
that's not in this case. Yeah,
no. Pitchfork said, Figure 8 ultimately isn't as good a record as EXO or Either Or, though the man's not out of the picture yet.
What the fuck is that shit?
What the fuck is that shit? Dude, seriously.
It's like he came out with an album and they're like, yeah, you know, it's not that great. So maybe, you know, he's just not going to make it anymore. Actually, no.
I'm sorry. Like, dude, if you didn't hear this for what it is, like, honestly, I hate to say it, but go fuck yourself. Like, how do you not listen to this record and think, wow, this is just a stunning record? I mean, many would call it a masterpiece.
Of course.
So anyways, that's what I wanted to touch on, because that was one thing that honestly bothered me when I was reading stuff about this. Like, and I understand that, again, these are opinions and they are my opinions and they are also the opinions of the reviewer. But I kind of think that the reviewer was off here. Just saying.
Yeah. It's tough because, you know, not to get on too big of a tangent here, but it's when people write these reviews, first of all, I mean, they probably only listened to it a couple of times. And that's why even when we do our first impression episodes, then it's not really reviews. That's what we call it, our first impressions. Because for me, I gotta have it for a while. I have to listen to it a few times, maybe put it down for a bit and then listen to it again, come back to it before I can give, I feel like, a true, honest opinion. Yes. Unless we're talking about the Foo Fighters' new album, Medicine at Midnight, which is awful. But that's a whole side thing. And, you know, I just think you need that time with it. And, you know, so there's a part of me that maybe doesn't blame them or the reviewers because they just had, but at the same time, that's your job. I don't know.
But the thing is, and this is something that I struggle with, and I would specifically cite the band Tame Impala, because I loved their first album, Inner Speaker, so much. I was like, holy shit, thank God there's a band that's making rock music, right? And then, you know, the next album, Lonerism, was a little different. And then they basically started doing the same shit as everybody else. Now, I would have accepted that for even like one or two albums, but that's just kind of what they do. But at the same time, I get the progression. Like, they want to do something that they want to do that's different, even if I don't like it. But I don't understand what there isn't to like here.
Yeah.
Because there's still the basic acoustic singer-songwriter stuff here, but he's also showing you, like, I have bigger ideas.
Yeah, I mean, dude, there's some heavier, rockier songs more than he had ever done before. And maybe we can get into the tracks here.
Sure.
Not even
rockier, just the depth. Depth in general is just there.
The layers that he uses, you know, I think, yeah.
Yeah. I didn't mean to go off on a tangent, but I feel like
we went on multiple tangents.
I'm ready to get into the tracks now.
Yeah, let's go off on a tangent and talk about the tracks.
So, all right, Son of Sam.
So, yes, Son of Sam.
Does anything stand out to you?
Well, what stands out to me is that Elliott Smith said this song is specifically not about the serial killer David Berkowitz, first of all.
Okay. I mean,
that should be known. But it is interesting because, you know, that is the title of the song. So I think what stands out to me, and just kind of how we just talked about sort of the layers in the buildup, this song has a buildup.
Yes, that's what I was going to mention.
And when the guitar hits, man, it hits. And it hits in a way that I had not heard in an Elliott Smith song, I think, previously.
I agree. But again, that's what, and I think you touched on it. That's what I think is so cool about, like, the intro of it. It comes in sort of subtly.
Sure.
You know, told the boss off and made my move.
Oh, son of yeah. Oh, dude. It's one of my favorite Elliott Smith songs. It's maybe in my top five Elliott Smith songs of all time.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. I don't think I'd put it there, but I really like this song.
And then we move on to Somebody I Used to Know.
Just somebody now, that I...
Not that song.
And honestly, I feel like for those people who don't like the progression, this kind of harkens back to
100%.
The stuff that they would be used
to. Ooh, absolutely. No, you're right. It's more acoustic driven, definitely more of what listeners are used to. Again, one thing, and we've talked about this offline, his use of double vocals, right? And it just so prevalent in this song. And he uses them really, really well. Really, really well.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, great, great words, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, who couldn't relate to this sentiment, right?
Uh huh.
And I think that approachability of the lyrics makes things, you know, kind of appreciable.
Relatable.
And yeah, sure. Relatable. And yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, what does he say? You know, I had tender feelings. I had tender feelings that you made hard, but it's not my, it's your heart, not mine, that's scarred. So when I got home, I'll be happy to go.
Yeah.
When I go home, I'll be happy to go. You're just somebody that I used to know.
There was another line in there that I really liked. Okay, well, I can't remember.
Moving on up. So, Junk Bond Traitor. I think this is another song for me that's probably in my top five of Elliott Smith songs.
This is a good one. What stands out to me is the use of the harpsichord. I mean, right away you can hear that.
Yeah.
And
I was going to, that's what I thought it was. And it's freaking good,
man. It is. And you know, another thing I like is, you know how some of those guitar riffs, they don't just like come in, they sort of fade in. And it's like the use of a volume pedal, which George Harrison does well sometimes in Beatles stuff, where it's like you get these nasty electric guitar tones that just kind of, they just kind of fade in gently. And it's funny because as a guitar player, like, one of the things that never really jumped into my pedal board was volume pedal. In fact, I never had one, dude. You have a distortion pedal, you have delay, you have wah, you have all this shit. But like, but the ability for that guitar to have that nasty tone and like subtly fade in is something that's really cool. And I think underappreciated by, I don't know, everybody.
Many people.
Yeah. So that always got me about this song.
Yeah, I love overall that this song just rocks.
It does.
Rocks from beginning to end. And again, it's a little bit of a departure from what he's done, but I love the growth. I love the different instrumentation. Some of my favorite lyrics, now I'm a policeman directing traffic, keeping everything moving, everything static. It's like, it's interesting because I see, and again, not to get too deep into his, you know, some struggles and things that he had, but I almost feel like this is, he may have wrote this when he was kind of coming out of something and he realized that, hey, I have control.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I feel like, you know, I'm the policeman directing traffic. This is going to go here and there and I'm in control of the situation.
Yeah.
And I think that's pretty cool. So,
And again, now you switch back to Everything Reminds Me of Her, which again goes back to the acoustic and
soft. It's sure. Funny how it's back and forth like that a little bit, right?
But I like it. And I really like this. I really like this song. It's really heartfelt. And it's, to me, it's like the classic Elliott Smith sound.
100%. Yeah. Cause I mean, to me, what stands out is just the way his voice matches what he's saying
and
the way he's playing
and how it counterpoints the acoustic guitar
in a very different way, but a very similar way, kind of like Nick Drake does.
Yes. And yes. That's a great comparison.
That feeling really matches.
And I like the lyric. So sorry if I seem a little out of it. Or no, he says, so if I seem a little out of it, sorry.
Sorry.
Yeah.
He's like, sorry. Sorry, not sorry. Yeah.
You came across it and lost it. Yeah.
Well, what I think is funny is, so he has this song, Everything Reminds Me of Her. And then the next song is Everything Means Nothing to Me. It's just, that's kind of a fun little, I don't know, contradiction a little bit in a way.
Yeah. Now, I did come upon a video of him playing this song live. And he did a good job, but I mean, you can tell that when they recorded this, it was probably like he took several takes and just honed in on that piano track and then sang over it. Because when he plays it live, like the timing just isn't as perfect in the, but I get it. I mean,
it's funny that you say that because I think I've seen this live as well many years ago, and I noticed something similar. Not to say that the live that it was bad or it wasn't good, but there's something I don't have to say off about it, but it's different. And even the way he sings it, the way, like, I feel like
I know
he sings it in a way where like each word almost gets a little louder or something.
Yeah.
There's something about it,
but I do love the buildup at the end. I think that's really cool.
Yeah. It's a very, a real, real non-traditional song in structure,
which
he does throughout this album in little spots here and there. So, well, now we get to L.A., Grim, and I know you dig this song, buddy.
Oh, I love this song.
What is it that you love so much about it?
The cadence of the guitar playing.
Okay.
It's like he's, and I don't know if he's picking it or with his fingers or a pick, but there's just something about that and the chords he's using. I didn't get out my guitar and do all that stuff, but there's something about how he does that. And the background vocals, I mean, the way it all like comes together is just.
Dude, those background vocals and harmonies, yeah, just like you were just talking earlier, like the Beatles and all that.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's all there, like that, all that's there, and it just, yeah. I don't know. I mean, the way the song kind of just like has that cadence, and then it just didn't. I mean, yeah. All these, it comes around so well, and it moves so well, dude. Things I've never done, cars parked in. The lyrics are good.
It has some of my favorite lyrics. I can't go home. It's not on my way.
Yeah.
Like I just, that's kind of cool. One that really stands out to me is when he says, last night I was about to throw it all away.
Mm-hmm.
And.
Oh, and then that. Boom. That climb up on that bottom string. Oh, that's phenomenal.
Well, one thing I noticed, and I feel like with this album, there are some definitely sadder, more melancholy songs, but. There's maybe not the darkness in the sound of the music. Like it does have elements of that here and there, but it's almost that comes out lyrically. Whereas I'm like, oh, this is a beautiful song. But then you listen to the words and you're like, whoa, okay.
I know. I agree with you. I agree with you. And that's what I think is so brilliant about it is that not all the music is as dark as the lyrics.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So, dude, in the Lost and Found, Honky Bach, which I understand why he calls it Honky Bach, because that the piano part is, well, the roost is that end part where it sounds like a bunch of reverse kind of stuff, which I think is cool.
It's real trippy, yeah.
But, dude, the Honky Bach part, I get because it seems like kind of a Bach-ish piano, And now it doesn't specifically it's got that cite this.
Kind of
yes,
feel to it.
I think I think it's a tack piano, but I don't know that's credited.
Right, I figured it would be. Yeah, because it does. That's the thing that really stood out.
I'm not mistaken, is there an accordion in there? Is accordion credited? I don't see accordion. Oh, maybe is that the pump organ? Yeah, that's the pump organ. Where it sounds like an accordion going, where he does the metal. I thought it was an accordion, but that's the pump organ. That's got to be that sound.
Yeah. Well, I just think the idea is, you know, he's talking about hanging around in the Lost and Found. Yeah. I feel like that almost sums him up or at least he looked at himself. He's like,
yeah,
you know, I'm here. Like something that's in Lost and Found. It's like, well, it's in a Lost and Found bin. Like,
waiting to see what happens.
It's there, but you know, the person is kind of looking forward, and it's not where it's supposed to be, but it is there.
Now, Stupidity Tries, number 8. I like how this at number 1. I like the title, but I really like how it comes in. Because it comes in very subtly, and then it kind of it gets a little bit of a pickup, and I think they do a good job. And at the end, it's got the build up.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we have talked about that a little bit with this album, how full his songs get.
Yeah,
and that is something he does really well. He can start off very slow and very simple,
subtle,
and then before you know it. There's all these things going on and there's, you know, strings and the guitars in there. And
this is a great example of that at the end of it. I mean, it's really fantastic,
dude.
Well done.
Some of the words, dude, the enemy is within. Don't confuse me with him. The truth is otherwise. Stupidity tries.
I know. So
he's just an amazing lyricist. He's one of those musicians who's really good at playing with words.
Yes.
And that's,
absolutely.
I really appreciate that. The Easy Way Out, Rintintim. Tim.
Yes. Kind of going back to the what many people would feel like is the characteristic Elliott Smith sound. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I like that because, I mean, dude, who hasn't known a person or been involved with the person? I mean, this is a sentiment that you could say for a lot of people. Hell, including yourself sometimes. I know. Probably. I could.
Yeah. And I, it'd be interesting to know who in his, life he's kind of talking about
here. Oh, sure. Sure.
Because if you watch the documentary, Heaven Adores You, they interview a lot of the women that he dated over these years.
Yeah.
And whatnot. But to me, this sounds like someone who is, I don't know if they're kind of passing through or maybe they're a little pretentious, but the words that stood out to me, like, I heard you found another audience to bore, creative thinker. You imagined you were more, a new body for you to push around and pose. It's all about taking the easy way out for you, I suppose. To me, it seems like someone who's maybe overly pretentious and they're trying to like find someone else who's actually really gifted and kind of latch on to them.
Yeah, sure.
And they don't, you know, they're just, they don't really fit in with them. Yeah. And then they're like, oh, well, I'm going to go find this other person and do that. So
that's the easy way out.
That's the easy way out.
I think we all know one or two or three.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, dude, we're getting them 10 times a day on this podcast.
Oh, so
everybody.
Bro.
The hanger-ons.
Oh,
just tell you that Forrest guy is the worst.
Oh, God. Now, wouldn't Mama be proud? This is one of my favorites on the album.
I love the way he sings it. Oh, it's so good.
I do too. Yeah. And it sounds like he knew someone who took like this big fancy corporate job that they knew was kind of bullshit and kind of, you know. There's a silver lining in the corporate cloud. And lyrics are so good. And I love the chord progression. To me, has similar parts to LA. Like, it's not played the same, but there's the way it climbs and it kind of does that. The pretty post you've taken as an NCO of the great pretender. I should think so.
Well, dude, yeah. Take it to the jet stream blowing coast to coast, the long stemmed glasses, a movie and a pleasant dream in midair. I mean, dude,
hey, taking the flights.
Not even first class, the private jet, man. Private jet.
Oh,
That's how we do it. That's how we
But I love this song. I really, it's one of my favorites on the album.
Yeah. Color Bars.
Dude. Like the opening line is all you need to hear. I see color bars when I come. Like,
I mean, yeah, it's not a bad one.
That just says a lot. I don't know. I mean, because anyone of our age group in our generation can picture those color bars on a TV, you know.
Shit, like, not again.
Yeah.
No, but dude, this, I know. I love the kind of the piano acoustic. It's got some shakers going on. Yep. Yeah, the shaker, right?
Yeah, the shaker's big in this one.
You know, the song moves along, but then there's, I think later again, the strings come in, right?
I know.
Like, it's one of those things.
It gets really beautiful. Yeah.
Yep. I love the end when he sings. You know, everyone wants me to ride into the
sun, but I ain't gonna go.
But I ain't gonna go down, right?
Yeah.
You know,
the other thing I was thinking is where he's like, you're just a dude with a stilted attitude that you learn from TV. Which is funny that he says you learn from TV, how that comes back to the idea of the color bars, because
color bars.
Where else do you see those other than old TV?
Ooh, old TV. All right, Grim. Happiness. The Gondola Man.
Yeah, this always struck me as kind of weird as just how it starts with that bring, you know, like those strummed out chords.
Well, I'll tell you what I think is weird about it. This was the first single from the album.
That's what I think is weird. I know. When I read that, I was kind of like, I get that maybe you recorded this before some of the other songs, but man, I would have just sat on this shit for a minute.
Yeah, yeah, probably.
I don't know. I wouldn't have made it the lead single, but what do I know? I mean, I haven't made Figure Eight or even anything that fucking matters, but I guess this still wouldn't have been my pick for the lead single.
Yeah, I think so.
There's so many other strong songs on the album.
Mm-hmm.
Like Pretty Mary Kay.
Oh, Pretty Mary Kay. Oh,
dude, I love the end of that, how it kind of goes, dun, 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 and it ends on the major chord. Oh, that's my favorite part. Like, dude,
sounds amazing.
I like the whole song, but like, dude, just the ending part on that major chord is just like, that's where my mind just like relaxes, you know?
Dude, fucking, you see color bars, huh?
Oh, dude, yeah, I see color bars when Pretty Mary Kay ends.
Yeah, I think this is an interesting song because I feel like it has kind of some peaks and valleys, and that's when it goes into his orchestration.
I find is
really interesting because he can, you know, he can strip everything down and then all of a sudden build it up and then he strips it down again.
I know.
And then it goes like that. And I just feel like this song is a really good example of that. So,
oh, I hear you.
So then we go on to I Better Be Quiet Now, which
I
is
better.
I feel like it's a very melancholy song, which some of his are, but I feel like one of the more, it leans more melancholy than the rest of
it. It does, but yeah. And this is one, and normally I don't say this, but this is one that not a whole lot to me
stands out.
Like, yeah, there's nothing really that I'm like, oh my gosh, I got to talk about this.
Yeah, absolutely. No. To me, it's from, I think that's from a musical perspective. You know, there are, when I look at the lyrics and everything, he's basically saying he wouldn't be lonely if he didn't experience kind of the, you know, the other side of that, being like, if I didn't know what loneliness was, then I would be fine with whatever happened. It sounds like, you know, you kind of like breaking up with someone and if they never moved in together, then he wouldn't know what that was like. And
lonely.
So no, it's okay.
That honestly makes pretty good sense. Yeah.
Yep.
I dig.
Yeah. Anyways, so
can't make a sound.
Cannot make a sound, dude.
Dude, this is another one that I think is interesting because it starts out very subtle and very much like what you would think of as the Elliott Smith you knew, but what it goes into, you know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Because this is at the beginning where he says, build. I have become a silent movie, correct?
Yeah. I believe so. Again, it does start slow and it's acoustic driven. And then those layers really start to build. Then all of a sudden, though, dude, there's like strings, the accentuating guitar, double vocals, drums are going on. It's just like,
well, probably drugs too. Yeah,
there's a good chance. You know, hopefully the fun kind. But
I think he was more of a heroin guy.
Yeah, he dabbled. He dabbled.
He more than dabbled. I mean, we'll talk about it when we do. From a Basement on the Hill someday, but what is he? Yeah. He's got this one song where he's like, it's Christmas time and the needle's on the tree and a skinny Santa's bringing something to me. I mean,
dude, that's kind of great.
He kind of throws it out there. Yeah,
it does. Yeah. Subtly. Well, the last song of the album.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Dude. Fucking dark, man.
I like it.
Yeah, I do too.
There's something about where I feel like it is the perfect ending to this album because it just, you know how when they, in some of the reviews and even in some of the stuff that he said, he talks about it as being very dreamlike. I feel like this is one of the most dreamlike kind of parts of the album. And I really like it for that.
I would love to know how it was recorded because it sounds like a piano sort of being played in kind of like a bigger room, but they mic'd it kind of distant. There's some space. There is some space in between or something.
I think that's more of the effects, because honestly, this would be one of those things like, and granted, I don't know, I wasn't there and I'm not going to pretend that I was, but I guess if I was going to record the song, I would record a very nice piano take of it where like I was happy with the instrumentation. And then basically like it's a matter of like filtering. So like you filter out some of the frequencies and like add space to it and kind of just play with that.
That's what I felt like, because it going. It feels like there's a lot of space there. He's exploring the space.
Oh, explore the space, yeah.
Exactly. So
yeah.
Well, all right, Grim. Should we?
Dude, we should. Now before we
Favorite songs?
I guess if I was gonna scratch this one, I'd probably use a hypodermic needle.
Probably.
Right. And no offense intended, but I mean, just in light of everything and in circumstances, that's what I'd use. So before we get out the hypodermic needle, what is it? And if you don't have one, you can give me like a top three, but I'd like to know your favorite.
Yeah. Son of Sam and Junk Bond Trader. Those are my just two favorites. Two favorites.
Easily. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to have to say L.A. and Wouldn't Mama Be Proud.
Okay. Oh, all right. All right.
Really love L.A. I mean, it's just such a good song, but I think Wouldn't Mama Be Proud. It's like, dude, I sing like.
Yeah.
I don't sing in the shower, but if I sang in the shower, I would be singing of the Great Pretender. I should think so. Yeah.
Yeah. I certainly. Yeah. Well, it's a good thing I live alone if I'm going to sing in the shower, because when he hits that high part, I can't hit that high part.
Yeah. You got to get into that falsetto, man. I should think so.
I can sing it. I just can't sing it loud. That's where it breaks. And it's
Dude. Yeah, that's a hard thing. I mean, not everyone can, you know.
Mm-mm. No, they
I can't. You know, not like Plant, but.
No, that's why there's only one. All right, Grim. Scratch this shit. You start. I don't remember who did last time.
I'm going to get the needle out and
man, the anticipation is killing
me. I'm going to scratch Happiness.
Ooh, okay.
Slash The Gondola Man.
All right. Any particular reason why?
Dude, this might sound stupid. Like, I don't think it's a bad song. But for some reason, the intro just kind of like hits me the wrong way. That ding, ding. And if I'm listening to the album and I hear that intro, like it just hits me in a way that like if I had to scratch one, that would be it.
Hit me, come get me. I'll bite, but she bit me. Coachella, Coachella, Samini and the Salmonella.
Come with me, because I'm
asking. I think I got half those words wrong, but I like that. Yeah. Anyways, all right, this is not a round.
You're ill, but I'm illa.
So I actually thought when we were going through the list and I heard you talking about some songs, I thought we might be going Islanders Capitals OT Zone.
Into OT Zone. With what song?
However, we are not. Because my scratch is I Better Be Quiet Now.
I can see that. I can see that. That just doesn't get me the same way that the other one does. Like it starts up and I'm like, yeah.
I mean, I think with it, it is a very melancholy song. And I know I kind of said earlier, maybe the instrumentation doesn't always match his kind of sad words and everything, where I think actually in this song, it probably kind of does almost more than any song. But it's just one I could, if it wasn't there, would I be, you know, would it be missed?
Probably not.
I love Pretty Mary Kay and then Can't Make a Sound. End with Bye. Dude. And it's like, hey, man.
Let's go. If you kind of just skipped over it, life would go on.
It would. Definitely would. So that is my scratch. I wonder what people out there, what would you guys scratch?
Please tell us yours. We would, I would really like to know, especially if there are fans who this isn't your favorite Elliott Smith album.
Yeah, dude, let us know.
Which I get. I get because it is different. But
I mean, it's not like when Dylan plugged in, but
Yeah, I get that too. But artists, you know, if they're true artists like Elliott Smith was, they're gonna make a progression. I mean, you know, Bowie didn't just do like eight iterations of Space Oddity.
Thank God.
You know? People move on.
Actually, it probably would have been pretty sweet. But anyways. Yeah. Yeah. But still. Yeah, he did Around the World and
Back Snap.
Yeah.
So
all right. Well, I think that pretty much scratches this one, Grim. It's official. Figure eight.
I would say it's official, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, everyone, please like, subscribe, comment below. I think it's time to go.
The Dude and Grim Show.
The Dude and Grim Show.
Scratch a Track is produced by The Dude and Grim. Additional music provided by Moore and the Timms. Copyright 2021. The Dude and Grim Show.